Welcome back to the Hearts Unleashed podcast. We're turning dreamers into doers. If you're ready to open your heart and take inspired action on your dreams, you are in the perfect place with wonderful people. Here's your host, dreamer, educator, and adventurer, Abigail Gazda.
All right. Welcome, Hearts. Welcome to the Hearts Unleashed podcast. I would love to introduce you to Sarah Woodard, a nature-centric badass dedicated to helping soul-searching, sensitive people feel safe and empowered to change their worlds through connection with nature. You guys, the connection with nature, I can't wait for you to hear from her, but I digress from the introduction in the first place. As a creator of Spark Consciousness, Sarah also loves to guide women to find their way in life and connect with community. So full disclosure, you guys, you know me well enough on the Hearts Unleashed podcast. I have to admit to you, this is actually the second interview we're doing with Sarah because I lost the first one. However, it gave me a reason to get to connect with Sarah again. So I can't tell you I'm not happy about that. And I jumped into that interview prematurely because of what I already know she has to share. So Sarah, welcome back to the Heart.
Thank you. I mean, you know, bummed you lost the first one because there was some real good content there, but always nice to see you. So there's that.
Yes, totally welcome. And so I'd love, we'll get back into what we were talking about before. Anne, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So for me, this connection with nature thing kind of started very early on, and it's been kind of like the keystone of my life journey. So when I was less than four, because we moved when I was like four or five. The house we lived in had this bush that grew in a circle. And because I was little, I could crawl into that spot where it, you know, joined up because it was like a doorway. And I used to just love to go in there and just hang. Now, as an adult, looking back, I know that what I was doing was connecting with Mother Earth and receiving healing, giving healing in return, talking to the bush. But as a kid, it was just my safe spot. That's all I knew. But then, as it happens to all of us, right? Like, we're born with all of this knowledge about who we are, how we're supposed to live in harmony with the world. But then, like, the world happens to us and we forget all that, right? There's societal expectations, there's parents, there's other grownups being like, do this, be this way. And of course, it happened to me. And two divorces later, a bunch of big life changes later, and I was like 30. I felt like I was looking at like basically a desert wasteland where my life used to be. And it forced me to find my way back to nature. But the interesting thing was, in refinding that connection to nature, I felt disconnected in a whole new way. I was angry about society and I felt really alone with what I was seeing and experiencing. And I came to understand that what I was looking for was a community of like-minded people. Because I started to understand that this rage was actually not mine alone. It was also Mother Earth's. But you can't fix it just by being spiritual and, oh, everything's great, positivity. Like, that's bypassing and doesn't fix anything. You need science, you need facts, you need people to put the science and facts to purpose, to use, to do something with them. And I had this really hard time, like, finding this community of people who could balance the spiritual with the science and do something to make a really positive difference for the world. And so eventually I said, well, screw looking for it. I'm just going to create it. And so I did. And that's how the Soulful Sisterhood was born.
I love that. I love that. And, you know, you said there's so much potency in what you were sharing around like connection with nature, but like a self-awareness of what happens while we age and the way life happens, you know, and then we turn around and see the carnage and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, so tell us a little bit about the turning point for you where you really woke up and like, it went from unconscious. Cause you said, I love the way you say that. Like, just as a kid, I wasn't thinking like, this is the equation, all of it. This is just my safe space. When did you become conscious to it's time to heal? It's time to sort of like take hold or charge of my life and the quality of it. And what did that journey look like?
So it was definitely like in that dark place in my 30s, like after the divorces and everything else. And I don't think there was like one like aha moment. It was more like I'm sitting alone in this teeny little apartment with my cats and literally staying alive because the cats need me. there was no other motivation for me not to take my own life other than I had cats that needed me and I didn't know what would happen to them. And that to me was unacceptable, to have them not have the quality of care and love that I would give them, even in that dark place in my soul, was not acceptable to me. So they kept me alive. And at some point, very gradually, I was like, well, if I'm going to live for the cats, I better find a reason not to hate waking up every day. Right. And it just kind of was like a slow, it was like very exploratory. Is that a word? I'm going to say it's a word. Exploratory surgery, right? So yes, that's a word. So it was like, I underwent like an exploration and I tried all sorts of stuff, right? And that's why, you know, ultimately it led to like my Reiki certification, which led to my shamanic training certifications. But it was just a matter of like, okay, well, I got to find something to do with my life because sitting here hating everything and knitting a sweater, even though it's like July and 85 degrees out because I don't know what else to do with my life, isn't acceptable. And I actually think now that I'm looking back on it, one of the first things I did was take a course in beekeeping because I had always been fascinated by bees. There was the Boston Museum of Science, I think it is, has a still to this day has a display with bees, and like they have a cutaway so that you can, and like plexiglass over it so you can look and see what the is going on inside the part of the hive that is in the building. Like they, you know, goes outside too, and the bees have access to outside, but you can watch this little bit of activity in this little cutaway part. And there was like a sign, like, can you find the queen? And it showed you like what the queen looked like and how the queen was different from the rest of the bees. And you could not pull me away from that display when I was a kid. So I took a beekeeping course and it actually happened to fall on my birthday weekend. And it was a 2-day course. So it was kind of like, all right, this makes sense. And it kind of started to just wake up the joy of life in me again, that I thought was gone. I mean, partly it was because it was bees, but also partly I just love learning new stuff. And so like that was helpful too. And eventually like I awoke to the fact of like, okay, but it's always, I mean, we never stop that journey really. We're always learning something new about life, about ourselves, about how we interact with the world. But there wasn't like this aha moment of like, okay, I understand why this happened to me. I'm still trying to figure out why the hell things happened to me. Like, you know, like you and I were talking about before we hopped on, like I just recently went through another really dark period where I was living basically for my cats and still don't totally understand why things have played out the way that they have. But unlike the first time I went through this, I can at least accept that there are reasons that maybe I don't know yet.
Very healthy, very healthy. I gotta jump in there because I think everybody deals with that.
Oh, yeah.
And for those of faith, we can rest in like, there's something greater. There's a greater plan than I can perceive. Mm-hmm. Right? But when there's a lack thereof, it can really lead to that loneliness in the depth. In the pit. And I think that matters to point it out because it's what will get people through it. And I acknowledge, I appreciate that you openly talk about like, I stayed alive for my cats because there are so many people who are hanging on by a thread, the thinnest thread, and they find a reason to stay, but you also more intentionally found reasons to stay for yourself.
Not eventually, took a while, but eventually. And I'm glad you shared all that because that was important. But also just to circle back to what I was saying about, you know, having just recently kind of gone through this. So with all of this moving back and forth across the country that I know we haven't really talked about, but listeners of my show will know that I've moved across the country about a million times. And my intention with finding this new home was that it be my forever home. I've been here at this point a little more than a month, and it was the weirdest thing, Abigail. Like I fell in love with it at the showing. I'm literally on the phone with the mortgage person while I'm standing in the house trying to get this all to happen. I come for the final walkthrough the morning of closing and I'm like, this is not even the same place I looked at. Why am I moving here? But at that point, what are you going to do? Right? I mean, I don't know. It's the weirdest thing I've ever experienced. And I was really angry for the first like 3 weeks I was here. I was furious with the universe. Like there are not words to explain the level of fury. And then I was watching some show or other on TV. I forget even what it was, but they said something about you can't be angry at God and also believe that he doesn't exist. Now, this was like a stupid, like, you know, sitcom or something. It's not meant to be profound, but it hit me as profound. And I was like, yeah, I'm livid pissed with the universe. And I think that every, and I'm also at the same time saying the universe doesn't exist. There is no higher power. It's all just fucking chaos. Those can't both be true. So there clearly is a higher power. So all of this went played out for a reason. I don't know what those are, but I guess I have to accept it. And in the meantime, let's focus on some other areas of my life. Like, I really want to grow my career, my business. I've been single for 15 years and it's been amazing, but I really am actually finally ready for a relationship. So like, let's maybe focus all of that anger energy in a positive way and try to make those things happen instead. But it took me like 3 weeks of every time I would wake up being like, I fucking hate it here. Why did I even buy this house? And I still have those moments for sure. But I can also in those moments go, okay, I'm not here forever, right? And I actually did talk to my mortgage person again. And I'm like, what are my options? Like, obviously there's no return policy on houses. So it's not a t-shirt. You can't go back to the store and say, doesn't fit. What can I do? And so we had a really honest conversation about, you know, where my business finances are and all of this. And she's like, you're looking at probably a year, Sarah. Okay, well, the past two moves were after a year and a half. So I guess we're doing that again. Not ideal. But when I look at the timeline of what I'm hoping for those other areas of my life, kind of it works.
Mm-hmm.
This next time better be forever. But, you know, but it took, like I said, it took like 3 weeks. And I was so devastated. I felt like my whole world fell apart all over again. I was right back to desert wasteland, feeling completely abandoned, not just by all the human people, because that happened too, for some reason that I don't understand, other than some people can't handle being the one who is the supportive person in the relationship when typically I have been that supportive person. And trying to ask them to be there for me apparently didn't work. It's supposed to. In a healthy, well-balanced friendship or any relationship, it's supposed to. So I can lovingly allow that to disappear, knowing the right people will come in. But again, at the time, it was very like desert wasteland all over again. But I have cats. And again, I lived for them until I could find ways to live for me.
I hear you loud and clear on that. You've said something I know about you, and something that what you're sharing is kind of leading me into, is you've talked about the importance of community and connection with nature, which I do want to get around to, but
yes.
But that now you're in more of a season where it's like intentionally causing community and connection, finding like-minded, like-hearted people. Tell us about that.
So like I said, for me, it really started with this, like looking for one to join that already existed. And nothing was like the fit that I wanted, because it needs to have that balance of the spiritual with reality, because we can't live in the woo-woo world. We are here on planet Earth and she needs us really bad. So, and yes, there are spiritual things we can do to help her, but she also literally needs like actual science-based support. So, like I said, I started the Soulful Sisterhood. And what I love about this community is, A, we're all sort of in that mindset, but also I very intentionally created it to be not just my community, but everybody's community. So like a lot of people who facilitate circles and other groups like that, they're sort of like the leader and they dictate what each meeting is going to look like and this and that. And that's totally fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with that model. But for me, like, we all have our own wisdom. I got my shaman training because some person who came to a retreat that I was hosting, so I was the leader, said to me, have you ever thought about shamanism? And it woke something up inside of me. So we all have that wisdom inside of us to share if we're given that room to share it. So I wanted this group to be different. Yes, I'm here as a facilitator. And if there's stupid bickering going on, I'm definitely going to be like, oh, we don't do that here. We respect each other's opinions. And if you can't do that, then you can't be here. But everybody has a say in what this group talks about, what the meetings look like, what things we want to do outside of our virtual get-togethers, if anything, et cetera, et cetera. And it can change and grow as the group grows and as the people who come in and out and whatever, because life shifts and things happen and your interests change. It's not meant to be this static, like, here's how the meetings work. It's not a box. And it's not a dictatorship in any way, shape, or form. And I personally think like that's what a community is. Like, yes, you need a leader of sorts to kind of keep things flowing smoothly, but a community is supposed to come together and support each other. And how do you do that if there's one person driving the ship, right?
Totally. And is this, you said, I heard you say virtual and in person. How could someone get connected?
Yeah. So ideally, like we would try to meet like once a month online, right? Does that always happen? Of course not, because life happens. There is the potential for in-person depending on like where everyone else winds up being geographically located. Or it could also be we just take an action away from that online meeting and do it ourselves in our life and then come back and bring it back to the online group. Again, we get to create it, right? So, and as a new person joins, maybe it changes and somebody leaves and maybe it it's dynamic and it fluctuates. Much like the one selling feature of this house that I'm in right now is that I have an amazing view of the Merrimack River. And so much like the river, it flows and it changes. And it's not even the same day to day or hour to hour. You never step in the same river twice. So the group will never be the same twice. It's not supposed to be because our lives aren't.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that. And yes, I love that concept. You never step in the same river twice. Like I didn't hear that until just a few years ago. And I'm like, oh, that is so true. You know what I mean? It's so life altering. At least it was for me, that perspective. Yeah. And something else I'd love to hear more about is being a sensitive person, because I am sure as the sun will rise that this Hearts Unleashed podcast, a lot of our listeners are sensitive people, have sensitivities, are in tune. You know, it's no mistake that they found this podcast and especially this episode. So tell us about being a sensitive person.
Well, as I'm sure all of those listeners that you're speaking directly to right then, no, you feel like you're under attack like all the time, right? Like it's noisy and people are so rude and the news is awful. Going to the grocery store is like the hardest, most worst thing. It's just, it gets really overwhelming. And you don't even always have the words to say like what's wrong. You just feel this like heavy, like everything is wrong with the world. My mother, the last time we actually spoke, because I can't, she's a toxic human and I've had to kind of cut that off, at least for now, until I'm in a healthier spot to deal with her toxicity. But one of the last conversations we had before I had to make that decision, she says, Sarah, every time I talk to you, it just seems like everything is wrong with the world. Well, yes, because it is. I'm not complaining. I'm saying we have to fix it. Right. And so I think a lot of sensitive people can relate to that, being told like, you know, you're being too sensitive, you're being dramatic, and everything isn't wrong all the time. Well, what do you mean? Damn it, when you're a sensitive person, it is wrong all the time. Even when you're a positive person, right? Like I'm very much a positive person. I'm not saying there's no hope. To me, not being a positive person means you think there's no hope. There is hope. There is shit bags full of hope. But
I love that description, by the way. Shit bags full of hope. I can't wait to use that more.
There you go. My gift to you. But the hope only works if we come together, right? So, but again, to be a sensitive person, like, you know, I think you hear stuff like that a lot. You're being hysterical, blah, blah, blah. The thing is it's just that we fucking care so much. And because we fucking care so much, and people who aren't sensitive and don't live in that world don't understand, all they think is that you're hysterical and you're out of your mind and, oh, you must have your period. Well, A, none of your business. And B, even if I do, what I'm saying is true, right? And so you get all of this messaging, and it's one of those things that pulls you away from your true self about you need to conform and you need to, you know, just deal with it and blah, blah, blah. And I'm going to call it a challenge because this is not easy. My challenge to all of you sensitive women who are being told all of this bullshit, very frankly, about sit down, be quiet, shut up and deal with it. This is not a curse. It is a blessing. Because we feel this so deeply, we have this ability to understand feelings of others. That is our strength. And so I want to challenge all of you to figure out how you can tap into that and start using it to create a positive change instead of sitting down, shutting up and being quiet because you're just too much. You're not too much. You're exactly who you need to be. You just need to figure out how to use it.
Amen. Amen to that. And I would even offer, because I know you work pretty exclusively with women, but we have men
and people who identify
as totally
women.
Sensitive. Yeah. But totally sensitive people. And like, I'm present to the care so much. And then you said, feel so deeply. And wow, wow, wow to that. Because I too, I grew up a sensitive person in a predominantly less sensitive environment. And so it was like, get over it, wipe those, like quit crying. Like, what are you crying about? And it's like, sometimes you couldn't, I realized as a young person, I realized while doing this work that as a young person, I was feeling, like you said, the pain of earth, the pain of people, the people, right? Like a collective people.
The collective,
and then, even ancestral. And so there would often be this like general angst or pain. And then though, I, as a young person, would project it. So I would find a reason I feel that way. So it'd be like, oh, because of basketball, because of school, because of my friend, because of whatever, whatever relationship or the something. I would find some reason to validate my feelings when really I just feel so deeply. And I realized as an adult, like how healthy it is that I don't need to, like, basically the way I relate to it now is like over intellectualize it, is I'm just feeling really heavy, really sad, really anxious. And then I will feel it instead of like plaster it to someone or something and then basically create a whole mess of it. And so it's been so much healthier. In fact, just the other day I was out back, I had a fire going and we were getting rid of this dresser nightstand and just took a sledgehammer to it and was just breaking it. And like all the rage, just allowing it to come through without being, without then ruining my day or having a fit, you know? And so it was like, it's learn how to channel it, to learn how to feel it, to allow it, I think is a big message that I was gaining from what you were sharing, is like, it's allowed, it's okay. And it is your superpower. Like our ability to feel so deeply is such a gift when we know it's a gift, when we relate to it as a gift, when we take care of ourselves and then start to use it. So I just appreciate your message. Is there anything you'd love to add to that?
Yes. So you can probably tell I'm like, hold the thought, Sarah, hold the thought, let her talk, because she's saying really good stuff, but hold the thought. Because you know how sometimes like they leave the station and you're like, crap, I wasn't.
That is why I have a notepad, because I would be the same way.
I loved, like, I loved everything you just said there. And I love this visual of just taking out the earth's rage or whoever it belongs to there. And so, but I wanted to follow up with two things. And the first is, I think all of us who are sensitive and grew up in that environment with people who didn't get it, do that same thing of trying to assign it to something, because they basically would ask you, why are you acting this way? Why do you feel this way? And you're like, I don't fucking know. So you had to make up a reason. And that became how we were taught to deal with our emotions rather than allowing them and feeling them. But I also wanted to just offer a tip, maybe for you, but also for your listeners, because I will have those moments where I'm literally like in my house, minding my own goddamn business, and I'm overwhelmed with sadness or rage or something. And there is no explanation for it because I'm literally in my house, minding my own goddamn business. And I'll just pause for a second. I'll go, are you mine? Do you belong to me? Frequently, the answer is no. And then I can dive into my healing tools and say, okay, well, who do you belong to? You know, what do you need? How can I support you in moving beyond this point, right? Frequently, so though, a lot of times if I just say, do you belong to me? It'll say no and just go away because all it really needed was just somebody to honor the fact that it existed.
Amen.
So yeah,
amen.
Just a little tip.
Yeah, I cannot say enough how special that is, because we are internalizing a lot of energy that is not ours. Mm-hmm. And, I could say it the exact opposite. So I want to say the other side of the same coin is, if you can feel it, it is yours. Meaning we are one, right? I know if I feel for everyone, it doesn't give them the power to feel for themselves. So you mentioned bypassing. I'm going to add like stifling and compartmentalizing and stuffing, right? So I notice that when I'm around people who have like primarily compartmentalized and stuff, like I can pick that up very quickly and easily. Mm-hmm. And so then if I'm the one alchemizing it, one, I'm doing a lot of heavy lifting for a lot of people, which is not my intention.
It's not your work.
The intention, not at all. And right. And the breakthrough isn't there. I can relieve someone like like off gas some of that, but sure. I'm not doing the work for them. Like there's no way we could do the work for anyone. And so correct. Not truly, not in a transformational type of way. And so, you know, supporting someone if they're available for that, right? Otherwise, I think it leads more to what you were saying around just finding like-minded, like-hearted individuals where, you know, maybe we don't want to be around people who refuse to do the work or be with right. emotions or process what there is for them. Because it's loud, right? I think part of being a sensitive person is having those 6th, 7th, 8th sense. And
right. Yeah. You know, I mean, yes, like the world is loud, like cars and planes and all of that, but literally like humanity to be around is loud and right. only sensitive people get it.
Right. It's like, again, a sixth sense of the
6, 12. Like, yeah.
right. I don't want to, you know, put us into any certain category, but the hearing voices or just all the different components. I call it static though. Like people static. That's why I actually really prefer working at night because more people are asleep. There's a lot less online kind of thing, in the airway.
I get up very early in the morning for that same reason, that there's that peace to the world, right? Yeah. Like people static, as you call it, has started to happen yet. Because even when you're not living with them, you feel it and it's there. And it's like, oh my God. Right. Like, I feel like you kind of get like the creepy crawlies up and down your spine of like, there's humans doing things and I know it.
Yes. Yep. Even, in fact, I'd love to give you a chance to share some about your relocations. But what sprung that I thought is I travel, my audience knows that, and different areas of the planet have different frequencies too, right?
For sure. So
I was taken completely by surprise when I was in Iowa, of all places, when I heard all the Native women, like I could hear the cries of Native women. And this was of, you know, the past, right? And so different, like I in the mountains and then in the prairies and the ocean. And so tell us about your travel journeys, all of that.
So I was born in Massachusetts and I spent most of my adult life in New Hampshire. And then like 3 years ago, I moved to Vermont. You would think like all three of those states are in New England. They've got to be pretty similar. They could not be more different. Massachusetts is very like, my family has been here since the Mayflower. That means I'm better than you. And it's at least now the neighborhood I grew up in or the town I grew up in, it's very WASPy. Like not, and I'm not using WASPy derogatively. I know it has like a derogative connotation. It's literally what it is. They were white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. That's who they are. It's just literally a descriptor. For me, it was a challenge being the only Jewish girl in my class. And I carried a lot of that anti-Semitic stuff with me to this day. But that was one vibe. Well, and I have to say that's really like Eastern Mass. Western Mass has more of like a New York vibe. And then New Hampshire also has different like regional vibes. Like when you get north of what we would say north of the Notches. And so the Notches are like literally notches through the mountains where the highways go. So when you get north of those notches, it's very like mountain man with the beard and the flannel and the we do our own thing, la la, right?
The rest descriptions because I've been up there, so I'm just enjoying myself.
So you know what I'm talking about. South of there, it's much more chill. Without like the Massachusetts-y, like we've been here since the Mayflower, unless you're at like some of the border towns where it kind of bleeds over, right? Vermont, oh God, the vibe of Vermont. I say this with due respect to people who love Vermont and have lived in Vermont. Like my perspective is going to be my perspective, right? And theirs is theirs and that's okay. So with due respect and with that understood, Vermont to me is like Alabama wrapped up in pretty paper. So I've started calling it Vermont-Abama in my circle of people because that's how it was to me. Like I said, I grew up with anti-Semitism. I have never experienced anything like I experienced in Vermont. It was horrendous. And if you are not born there for 2 generations back in your family, you are forevermore a Flatlander and they will never really accept you. Icky to me, right? Again, due respect. But they're very like, guns are a part of our heritage. Are they though? Let's really think about this, right? And you can't have a conversation with them unless you're not a Flatlander.
Yeah.
Challenging, and not who they present themselves to be, which is ultimately my biggest issue with it. Like at least Alabama, like you kind of know what you're getting into, right? Vermont, you think you're getting this one thing and it's not it. So that to me was even worse. And so after like a year and a half there, I made the decision to move out to Colorado and actually drove there because of cats. I'm not putting cats on plane. And so it was very interesting driving across the country and feeling all of the different vibes all the way across. And I'm not going to touch on all the states because we don't have that kind of time.
Yeah.
But I do just want to hit on two things really quick. First is Illinois and Indiana, although I could never, ever live there because it's just too flat for my personal tastes, had the best vibes, like warm, fuzzy, amazing, great vibes. Ohio was, with due respect to everyone who loves Ohio, it was icky.
I got to say, I don't mind being quoted. Out of all 50 states, Ohio lands at 51.
Icky.
But that's because I'm from Indiana, so I have a little.
So there you go. Indiana's vibes are phenomenal, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of the Midwest hospitality packed these states.
They're great. In Kansas, I loved, again, it was too flat for my taste, but it's not as flat as everyone says. It's definitely not, but it was lovely vibes. And Colorado was gorgeous and amazing. And I really hated to leave on some level, but on some level, I also knew like I needed to. I'm still not, like I said before, I'm still not even sure I've wound up where I'm supposed to be, but it's where I'm supposed to be for now. I do definitely miss it. Like Colorado has a lot of like those just down to earth, really good people. Like I love to use this as a contrast. So in New England, I don't care which state in New England, if you are in like a Walmart or the grocery store or wherever, and you're like, hey, person who works here, where's XYZ thing? They will tell you the aisle number or they'll like gesture and grunt. And that's the best you're going to get for help finding the thing you need. In Colorado, if you're in one of those same places and you say, hey, person who works here, where is XYZ thing? They stop what they're doing and walk you to the thing just as a matter of normal interactions.
Yeah.
You know, and it's even seen with the drivers. Now, it's funny because there was a study that somebody did about how bad Denver drivers are. And I was peeing my pants laughing because if you think Denver drivers are bad, you have never, ever driven in the Boston area. In the Boston area, they will as soon hit you as look at you. They're half the time doing their makeup with a brick on the freaking gas pedal, not even paying attention. In Colorado, in Denver, if you've got your blinker on because you're like, fuck, I needed to turn them in the wrong lane. It happens to all of us, right? You've got your blinker on to let like to signal like, hey, I meant to go over there. Sorry. They will stop and let you in. In Boston, they will purposely not let you in. It's just a very different culture.
Totally. Yeah. I think every single state, and then as you're talking, even regionally within states,
there's different.
And I just saw this video of a European, I think he was British. He's like, you know, people in Europe are constantly like bad mouthing Americans that they're not cultured, that they don't travel, when in reality, America, the land is so vast. Like we have states bigger than the entire continent, right? And so,
exactly.
And so it's like, it's just so different. And when you really get out there, you experience that. And I have to say, there's something that is deeply nurturing to me. To go places and be a nobody. And like, I want to say people watch, but mostly just like be in this new place and observe new things, new nature. Yeah. I love typography as far as, like you said, Indiana, flat. Like most of this region is flat. But once you get out anywhere, you're seeing these hills and mountains, and then the way that people do life and all of it, I just find that so fascinating and really, really inspiring.
Yeah.
Energizing.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that was one of the fun things for me, because until that point, I had never really been west of New York.
Yeah.
And so it was very fun for me on the trip out to get to experience all that. On the trip back,
different.
Like I said, I didn't really want to leave, but I also, and I was at that point, I was literally rocking a hard place. Like I had planned to, when I was planning to leave Colorado, I felt like I had this bigger call of opening this healing center and da 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 da. And I had found a place in like Syracuse, New York area and all of this stuff. And I was like 24 hours from closing on the paperwork. And I was like, that's not the right thing to do. And I knew with every fiber of my being, it wasn't the right thing to do. So I pulled out. But at that point, I had canceled my lease. All my stuff was packed. Rock in a hard place. I'm like, where do I even go? So I went to New Hampshire, because on some level, New Hampshire's always felt like home.
Yeah.
some way. It's never felt 100% like home. And as I'm diving into doing this work with a mentor now and trying to figure out, like I said, mostly I'm focusing on like the other pieces of my life, but I'm also realizing it may be that I never truly find a place that feels like home completely, in part because I'm sensitive and in part because I'm Jewish. And I hate to say that, but anyone who's sensitive and is paying attention knows that anti-Semitism and all sorts of hate is on the rise, which is awful and terrible. I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
But also, I carry with me those wounds of anti-Semitism from when I was a kid.
Right.
I did do some research. So somebody that I know from Denver, she is Mormon and married to a Jewish man. Mm-hmm. And I asked her, I said, Rachel, how did your parents feel about you marrying a Jew? Because I knew next to nothing about Mormonism. So I thought they were pretty exclusive, and they are. She's like, oh, she's like, she says, Mormons, we love Jews. We hate everyone else other than other Mormons, but we love Jews. So, and I was like, why? And so she's explaining to me their beliefs, and, you know, I won't get into all of that because that's a whole other show, but it was really interesting. And so it sparked me to start researching Salt Lake City. And it was fascinating to me because like anti-Semitism and acts of hate happen everywhere. What matters is how does the community respond when it happens? And Salt Lake City, they are taking such a hard line of like, we will not tolerate this in our city or in our state. This needs to be a safe place. And I'm like, oh, maybe that's where I need to go. Can't right now. That's okay. It can ruminate and brew in my brain. But how funny would that be if this wandering Jew found her home among a bunch of Mormons?
Salt Lake is, it's a very medicinal place, nature, it is. And so to hear you say that, because we haven't talked about that before. So to hear I get a buzz sure. So I love that. Now, before we start to wrap up, you've been kind of touching on it. And I want to, from the context of a sensitive person, is you're leading inside. You're like, it didn't feel right. The vibe, tell me about intuition as a highly sensitive person and how we can honor that better.
So I want to first say that it can be really hard as a sensitive person to get to the point where you are regulated enough to even know what's your intuition and what is something else.
Amen. Keep going.
And so I think the first thing you have to do is figure out where does your intuition live in your body? Because it is very much a somatic body experience, I think, for most people. I can't tell you how everyone exists in the world, but my sense is from the people that I've talked to, the people that I've worked with, it lives in your body somewhere. You have to find it. And for a sensitive person, everything is living in your body all the time. And you have to kind of get through that clutter and get through that noise. And I actually just did this little bit of a questionnaire with a friend of mine to try to help her sort through it. And so I haven't played with this a lot. Like, I don't know how successful this will be, but I'm going to offer it as something your listeners can try. And then if there's feedback, awesome. But put yourself through these questions and pay attention to where it lives, not just where in your body it feels, but how it feels. And so here's an example, and then I'll go through the question. So where does joy live? Where do you feel joy? And so one example could be like you feel joy in your heart and it feels warm. Cool. Now, let's go to the opposite end of the spectrum. Where do you feel it when you're angry, right? And an example might be you feel it in your throat and it feels tight. I don't know. I'm giving examples that might not be your physical body experience, but figure out what it is for you. So the questions, where do you feel joy? Where do you feel anger? Where do you feel despair? What was the other? I asked her two others. I should have written them down. It was brilliant at the time.
I hear you on that.
We'll try those three anyways and see how that goes. And I suspect that what you're going to find is that it's localized to one or two parts of your body and you're going to get some clues. And so how it works out for me personally is my gut is where the anxiety and stress of the entire world lives. So I basically have to ignore that if I'm trying to find my intuition. I honor that it's there and that it needs to live there. That's fine. I'm a sensitive person. I can't just remove that. But I have to set that to one side if I'm trying to tune into myself. And so for me, I feel it in my heart and in my throat. And in both cases, like if there's like a closing down, like my throat gets constricted, my heart feels almost tight, like not like you're having a heart attack tight, but like just tighter in that space. That's not a good thing. Don't go in that direction. That is not what you want to do. That's not going to be good for you. If there's like, and it will start in my throat and go down. versus if it's the right thing, if it's a good thing, my heart starts to open and it goes up and also opens my throat. So, but again, that's my body, right? So you got to, that you have to kind of tune into that. And it can be, like I said, it can be so hard when you're a sensitive person and you're feeling all the things of all the people and all the animals and Mother Earth.
Yeah. I think though, a really good key to part of that was regulate, you know, are you feeling safe? Are you feeling rested? Are you feeling, you know, protected or cared for or held?
And the safe question, it's fine. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I just want to jump in and say this because this was a question I just had to wrestle with. There's different types of safety and we need to, I feel like we need to define that better for people that we work with because like I feel safe within the four walls of my home, right? Mm-hmm. I am safe with my cats here. The doors are locked. They have additional locks. Not like, I'm not crazy with the locks, but like, you know, they have like the deadbolt, right? Like nobody's getting in. However, I do not feel safe to be my true self out in the world. And I may never feel that because we live in the world that we live in and because I'm a sensitive person. I cannot change the world we live in. I can only regulate myself and recognize that part of that is retreating to my safe space. So we need to make sure that when we're saying to people, do you feel safe? We're very clear about what does that mean?
Yeah, I love that because for me, living in a van, I feel safe. And I get questions probably weekly, like, how do you even sleep? How do you feel safe? Like, aren't you afraid someone's got, no.
I don't park in a place where
I'm not in questionable places, right. But you know, as a single female, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Like all those, there's safety. There's like, you know, like you're saying there's a physical safety versus mental and emotional safety, right. Spiritual safety. So I love the distinction you just laid out because we have to check in on those to really look at how expressed we get to be. And then to add in the intuition conversation, like what is the authentic voice of our intuition? So I appreciate that insight. It's really brilliant. And I really appreciate you. I have so appreciated a second chance to interview you and hang out. So,
yeah. I mean, like I said, bummer we lost all that, but I think we did just as an awesome of a job. So it's totally good.
I loved it. I thought so too. So thank you. Thank you. And how can people connect with you?
So, well, thank you, first of all, Abigail, for having me. It was a pleasure being here for a second time, sort of. So once again, I am Sarah Woodard from Spark Consciousness. And since I'm sure everyone is, you know, rushing around doing errands or whatever else, I want to make this really easy for you to connect with me. But I also know if you're rushing around, you probably really are looking for some sort of community and connection and space to make some room for some self-care in your life. So I would love to encourage you to join the Soulful Sisterhood to connect with other people, face other sensitive people facing these exact same challenges like we've been talking about. As I mentioned, we don't do this high vibes only stuff. We get dirty. We are very real. And you get to have a say in what that looks like. So you can find me and the Soulful Sisterhood at sparkconsciousness.net. And then the sisterhood is /community. And I'm sure that Abigail will be kind enough to drop that in the show notes for us.
Totally.
And if that is too much to remember for you, just remember the secret code word sisterhood. And then when that pops in your head later, you'll know to come on back to Abigail's awesome show and grab the link.
I love it. I love it. And I wanted to say in the beginning, I also had the pleasure of being on your show, Give a Fuck.
Yes.
Right. So yeah. So you guys, we have a whole nother conversation over on Give a Fuck. It's episode 29, and it's shining a light on the realities of shadow work. So we are talking about that inner family systems. I loved that conversation so much. So
it was super good.
I think people would love it. I think you asked brilliant questions and then we were just kind of jamming out on that. So
we did. We had fun. We had fun. It'll be easy for people to find because there was only a few more episodes after you and I, and then I've been kind of on hiatus.
Yeah.
My life in order.
Totally.
So it'll be kind of near the top and
awesome
to find.
Good.
Back in some form at some point, but
no doubt. But definitely you guys go tune in to Give a Fuck. And I think you'll be able to remember that one. Go put that in.
And it's spelled for people who need to look for it. It's spelled F*K.
Yep.
Or you can also just search your podcast platform for Spark Consciousness because that's right.
Cool. Awesome. Awesome. Well, Sarah, thank you for being with us. I so appreciate you. It's good to connect again.
Thank you.
And Hearts, thank you for tuning into the Hearts Unleashed podcast. I hope you heard exactly what you needed today to get the spark you need to go transform your life and live consciously. So thank you for tuning into the Hearts Unleashed podcast, where we are turning dreamers into doers. We love you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Hearts Unleashed podcast. We hope you found all the inspiration that you needed today and that you use it to take the next inspired action on your dreams. If you love the show, share it with a friend. We love spreading the love. For more information, to listen to more episodes, or to shop Hearts Unleashed, visit us at heartsunleashed.com. See you next time, Hearts.